the show that goes there. This is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome to it. Boy, do we have a lot to cover today. And by we, I mean, I don't know how I've done this, but somehow I've suckered in our West Texas correspondent in for today's hijinks. Those hijinks include Donald Trump pinching a tantrum about not having his way in the Fed, a lot of people not understanding the full extent of the Alabama law, how Kylie Jenner perfectly illustrates that people don't understand Alabama's abortion laws, and a lot more to come, including how me and Drew are possibly enemies of the state. Before I get to the rest of the show, I should go ahead and say, hi, I'm public enemy number one, according to Donald Trump. My name is Shaggy Jenkins. You can find me at my website, shaggyjenkins.com, or wherever fine social media is served. Or if you are vacationing this summer and you're on the Isle of Maui, yeah, that's the same guy. Joining me from the West Texas district, where there was once a politician by this name, and guess what? He was the same guy as well. Please welcome on his summer break, luckily we caught him, it's Drew Landry.
Hey, I'm so happy to see you again. Happy trails, and here we are.
Oh, man. So this is one of those things that even Roy Rogers would have a hard time with. Donald Trump has been making what we shall say a Texas-sized dung heap mess of his behavior up in the White House. Wouldn't you agree there?
Yeah.
How is it the guy from North Carolina does the Texas accent? The guy from Texas goes, yeah, no, we're not doing that.
No.
But, you know, I mean, it's kind of funny when you look at this story, because it is almost one of those things where it's like, I can't believe he's saying these things and nobody is laughing out loud. Donald Trump on Monday basically got in front of a bunch of people and said, you know what? I'm the president, damn it. Why should I be beholden to anything? Drew, can we start with just... why is it, reason number one, the president of the United States is not, in fact, a totalitarian potentate, all-powerful and omnipotent?
You know, that's a great question. You know, there's a lot of people in our country who like to think that the president can, you know, has some sort of a magic wand and tries to destroy things that might be good for others and really want to kill the entire country and all this and that. Truth of the matter is this, is that when we, and this is, I'm going to do one of my lessons in a very quick way to not bore, you know, the entire audience. So we don't have a monarchy. We have a constitutional republic that has three branches of government, and one of them is the executive branch. And we have separation of powers and checks and balances. So the president constitutionally doesn't really have a lot to do, except, you know, there's informal powers that he has, and he has a great deal of influence in deal making and lawmaking. He can influence Congress, and he's got a really good bully pulpit where he can go to the people, this sort of thing. So when the president gets all upset and has a little temper tantrum, and to be fair, presidents don't, you know, they all have their own little share of temper tantrums.
Yeah, can we just go through Richard Nixon's, like, just never anybody from the Washington Post. No one from the Washington Post will ever be in the White House again.
Yeah. So, this is kind of where we are here, is that these independent agencies that, you know, because Congress created the Federal Reserve and made them an independent industry here. So what we have is this agency that gets to act on its own. People on this Federal Reserve Board are appointed by the president. They're confirmed by the Senate. And so these are people who the president has felt who were good for their job. And he appointed them to these positions. And the president, this current one, has appointed a lot of people to the Federal Reserve Board. Okay. So it's not like he got to, you know, just appoint like one or two or, you know,
no,
three.
This was the equivalent of like Thanksgiving dinner in the South where your grandmother doesn't exactly know what the inside volume of the turkey is and tries to fit three times that volume within the same space. That's exactly what Donald Trump has done versus what other presidents have done. Am I wrong here?
No, you're not. I mean, he's made a heck of a turducken. And
that's not gravy.
So what we have is he's upset that they're not doing his bidding. And that's well within the confines of the presidency, is that, you know, you're not doing this, so I'm going to get mad. But to go on CNBC, on another media outlet, and to compare other leaders from foreign countries, like President Xi from China, and others that are rather dictators or authoritarians, and say, hey, look, they just get to do whatever that they want. Why can't I do that? Why isn't it like me? That's because you don't understand checks and balances, Mr. President. I guess you were asleep in that whole civics lesson about separation of powers and checks and balances and the whole aspect of government. I don't know what he was doing. So,
yeah, they were called enumerated and non-enumerated powers. You know, it's
right.
Maybe it's the word itself that confused him. But here's the thing. What shouldn't confuse him is the fact that the president is not Article 1. Drew, of our three co-equal branches of government, since we're talking about this whole civics lesson today, which one of those is actually listed first in the Articles of the Constitution?
That would be Congress. Article 1 is Congress. And so they have the most powers there. All right. There's 10 sections to Article 1. There's not that many sections in Article 2 dealing with the presidency. And then there's, well, three sections in Article 3. And they're just like, you know, and there'll be a Supreme Court somewhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, and that's the funny thing. It's because literally if you try to translate the Constitution as it was back then into modern speak, those two things that are listed under Article 2 for the president is one, must show up and be a United States citizen of natural birth. And two, well, you kind of sign things, but yeah, we can bypass you if we want to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's going to be this head of the military, and he'll give a State of the Union address, and he, you know, gets to sign bills into law, and he gets to, you know, veto bills. He gets to propose treaties but every step of the way, and just about every single thing that he gets to do, there is some sort of a check that Congress has. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when it comes to appointments, Congress gets to confirm them or even reject them, you know, mainly the U.S. Senate. So, you know, it's interesting as to how this document, as flawed as it is, really does a pretty decent job of balancing out power and separating it. And this has caused a lot of heartburn. It's caused a lot of headaches, mm-hmm. but it's the best thing that we have. And this current president, well, he doesn't like it because his power is limited, and he just wants everyone to do what he wants, as if, you know, he's Kim Jong-un or he's, you know, President Putin.
Mm. Well, see, here's the thing. A lot of people always think Donald Trump's business experience will make him so good for this job. Okay. That's people that don't understand exactly what a CEO is. Now, as somebody that knows a lot of former CEOs, let me tell you exactly how their job functions. Okay, with inside of a corporation, Drew, we're going to draw comparisons between the corporate world and your crazy political world. Are you ready?
That sounds great. Let's do it.
Okay, so for the most part, let's just take a retail chain that sells products. That retail chain depends on the vote of the people, in other words, their consumers, coming in time and time again to support their initiatives or items on the shelf. Now, so far, have I got it pretty similar?
Yeah, it's pretty on the nose right now. Yeah, okay.
Okay, so as such, this company isn't really owned by a single individual. It's owned by a bunch of people that have poured their money into making this business viable. In other words, they've given faith unto that system to make it a legitimate and accepted system. These people are kind of what you would call the super voters of the consumer world, or you call them trust, or fund holders or stockholders. Now,
stockholder, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So if we look at stockholders, stockholders could be compared to almost the Electoral College. Stockholders represent a percentage of the consumer base that has gotten a little bit higher in the echelon and actually invested money into the company for a percentage of the voice. That is okay. Almost like representative government and how states have different representatives in the House of Representatives based on the volume of business or population.
Okay.
Okay. So far I'm making sense, right?
Yes.
Okay. So the trust holders or the stockholders get together and they hold elections for people to represent their interest in a unionized fashion, almost, in front of other aspects of the business. These elections are held almost, once a year. They're held in some businesses and others 5, 10. Everybody has a cycle. But the thing is that the stockholders vote on these people that represent them. They're called the board of directors.
Right.
That is exactly like how we, the voters, determine our representative within the United States government. That would be our representative or our senator. Am I wrong?
Okay. All right. I'm following you.
Okay. Now, remember how we said that, you know, the stockholders kind of function as the Electoral College? Well, there's a reason why. The stockholders, through the board of directors, has to be convinced of the lead executive or the chief executive officer, CEO, of that board. He is there basically to be a decision maker in the event of a tie on the board of directors, a person who actually puts pen to paper executing the executive orders that were voted on by their board of directors, and if there comes a conflict, whereas the board of directors does not represent the interest of the consumers or the stockholders, he can veto said decision and go through arbitration, which for us, that would be the exact same process as somebody voting for a representative to go to the House of Representatives, them making a law, the president's job basically to sign that law in or that act into law, or veto it. And if they do veto it, the House of Representatives, aka the Board of Directors of the United States of Directors, can go back and do a majority vote, in the case of us, 2/3 majority, overturn a presidential veto. And as such, a board of directors within a company can, in fact, issue inquiries and investigations and even suspension and termination of their CEO. That's kind of like how our impeachment process works, isn't it?
In some way, yeah.
So at the end of the day, when everybody is trying to collude and just make this whole thing kind of too confusing to understand, it's really easy if you follow that example we just laid out, huh?
It's not that difficult, yeah.
So this is the question. How is it that Donald Trump doesn't get that he's still, even though he's an executive officer, he's still an employee?
that's a tremendous question. I wish I could get in his head and just, you know, figure that out. My, you know, as he likes to go with his gut, my initial thinking is, he thinks that he doesn't really have to answer to anybody at any time because his name's, you know, Donald J. Trump. And that's how he feels, and that's what he wants to say, and he doesn't feel like he's beholden to anybody, no matter who he wants to elect. I mean, how many times has he said a lot of things about the people? I mean, when has he gone and said things about the people, other than attacking the media and calling them a bunch of names. You know, he's just, you know, talked a lot about a wall, how he wants to keep doing all these jobs. He's talked about no obstruction, no collusion.
Tariffs are good.
Yep. And he's talked about how tariffs are not that big of a deal, and this isn't, you know, that, and they're going to be paying for the wall. And so he hasn't really, you know, when he goes on the campaign trail and go on the stump for his agenda, he doesn't really say a whole lot how something is going to affect them. He says how he's the one fighting for jobs, or he's the one doing this. I mean, he's always able to make it about himself in some way. And that's just his nature. I mean, that's just how he's been. Again, this isn't a guy who is just new to the spotlight. He's been in the spotlight. He really came to fame in the 1980s, you know, with all of his, you know, glory of real estate experience and screwing people over. This was all known. It's just that people didn't – they wanted something different in the 2016 year. And they said, even this guy who says crazy things, I'll take him right now.
Yeah, because
I
just kind of want to segue here before we run out of time, because I do want to spend some time talking about this, because Donald Trump's pattern of behavior is attack, 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 attack until said institutions either relent or – he is basically hit with some sort of subpoena or some sort of action that tells him, hey, buddy, knock it off. When it comes, though, to the favorite court of people like Donald Trump, the court of public opinion, look, Drew, his behavior as of late has kind of a weird toll if you look at some recent research into people's attitude towards guys like me and you. You see...
Yeah.
In a latest poll, and you sent this to me. Where is this from again?
Yeah, this is from let me find it just real quick here. This is from Quinnipiac. This is from Quinnipiac poll that was done just in April, and just a couple of months ago. Well, about a month and a half ago, asking about these respondents. If the news media is enemy of the people or an important part of democracy. And when we take all of the respondents, 23% said that they are the enemy. About 2/3 of respondents said that they are important. When we get down to party lines, 4% of Democrats said that it's the enemy. 92% said of Democrats said that it's important. Republicans, 36% of Republicans polled said that it's important. Almost half, 49% of Republicans polled said that the enemy of the people, that's the news media, is the enemy of the people.
That's the thing, Drew, is because when I look at stories like this, I'm going, what did I ever do to you? I just...
Yeah.
I assembled some facts. I threw in some pop culture references. I don't think I've done anything particularly treasonous. Have you done anything treasonous on this show?
I haven't called for anything treasonous. I don't. Yeah.
No. I mean.
No.
I may have made a couple of jokes and used a derogatory term called maybe cracker, but I figured, you know. Call it how you see it, and I see it that way every day in the mirror. But, you know, the thing is like, Donald Trump's relentless assault, every single time he's got a microphone in front of him, is having a big lead with the GOP. Not so much the Democrats, who still see us as viable, and gosh darn it, we're people too, but the GOP... is really leaning into this philosophy of we're the enemy of the people. Drew, I want to ask a very simple question.
Okay.
Is it because we don't agree with their agendas?
I think that's exactly what it is. I think it's two-pronged. I think it's the fact that there are media outlets that will critique and there are opinion shows that will criticize President Trump. And then you have those who will say, well, they don't ever do that to any Democrats. So it's, you know, they're trying to have it both ways here. They want a media that will just pat Trump on the back for everything and never, ever give him any type of criticism. And, well, truth be told, there is a network like that, and it's called Fox News. And anybody who ever criticizes him on that network is suddenly called out and said, you're just a bum, you're worthless, you know, you're terrible and all this and that. So, this is just a weird situation.
It really is, because when you think about weird situations, I mean, first, it's Donald Trump. At what point is this not going to be weird? Number two, though, as long as we're talking about weird situations, I have never in my adult life existed in a country whereas half, almost half, of one political side of the aisle is so contemptuously against a free and open media. And this is, I dare say it, this is kind of fascist-like wanting, is it not?
It's so much like that. It's just saying, you know, that you don't like the First Amendment when it doesn't go your way. And they have really bought into that, you know, NBC, you know, the New York Times, USA Today, Washington Post, ABC, you know, all of the mainstream media is somewhere out there to get and to try to destroy President Trump. When you look at the ones that are critiquing him the most, it's these opinion shows that are on MSNBC and CNN and even some on Fox. It's those that are the ones that are really doing it. Not, I mean, what the mainstream media will do, and I have to say this, you and I don't do that. It's pretty much clear as to where we are on things. Mm-hmm. There's no hiding as to where we are. But when it comes to the mainstream media, I have to say this. I in my heart of hearts don't think that there's so much bias as they are lazy. And that does go into a whole host of things. I do think that they have their best interests in mind, but I also think that they have stockholders in mind and they have clickbait in mind. Mm-hmm. So there'll be some sort of a headline, you know, whether it will be, excuse me, my dog likes to just make noises. I apologize for that. But there'll be some sort of a thing here that will say, like, you know, Trump has heart attack. And then just to get so much and so much click on that, and then you read it and it goes, oh, and then like the dog Trump had a heart attack or something, you know, it's a bit, it'll be a bit misleading. I mean, that's a terrible example, but that's really the best one that I could think of.
You know, I almost thought that your dog howled on cue there because you were hitting a pretty sad part of the narrative. And I'm like, wow, even your dog is into a free and open media. This is sad. I mean, do you ever notice that your pet looks at you with those longing puppy dog eyes like, I'm so sorry that you work in journalism?
She looks at me and just says, you know, can I jump on the couch?
Yeah, because I'm afraid someone will shoot you because you work in journalism. Okay, so the thing about this poll, though, is it shows us a very weird political divide. Now, people on the Democratic or even independent side overwhelmingly think that, you know, hey, media is here to stay because it's not in fact, a enemy of the state. It is a tool of democracy. Those two parties, and if you look later down in the numbers, they both said a free and open media is a tool of democracy. Whereas those 49% of people that were on the enemy is the, you know, media is the enemy of the state, they said, and I'm not making this up, Facebook is a great place to get their news from.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, you know, that's a great place. You know, you can get all the types of trusted stuff right from Facebook, and you're just, oh boy, you know.
I mean, you know, I've heard of blatant ignorance, but this almost seems like, at least as far as this GOP base, like half of them, a wanton ignorance, a I guess self-imposed, almost protective ignorance. Am I wrong?
No, it's as though you know, they it just comes down to what they think is fair, and what they think is fair is always supporting the Republican and always bashing the Democrat. And this poll stunned me to my core, yet at the same time it did not surprise me one bit. I've made that analogy several times on your show as to how anybody could have such a conflicting feeling might be virtually impossible. But looking at this makes me say, how in the world can anybody actually feel this way and actually have this type of opinion? And then you realize that the leader of the Republican Party constantly says that the media is the enemy of the people and constantly calls everything that goes against him to be fake news. You know, goes after the New York Times, the failing New York Times, and the poor Washington Post or whatever type of silly name he likes to give things. Mm-hmm. And his base just eats it up. They go, that's exactly what it is. Wall Street Journal's bad. Washington Post, terrible. New York Times, failing. USA Today, who knows what they do. So, you know, why would you want to read that? You know, you need to watch One American Network and Russia Today, and you need to watch Fox News, and you got to read, you know,
manifesto of some weirdo. Okay, look, yeah. We got to stop because speaking of weirdo manifestos, our next segment starts with Fox News. I hope you joined us. It's the Shaggy Chicken Show.
News, less alternative facts. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network, as they say round my neck of the woods. Howdy, y'all. Welcome back. We have got a lot to cover, including how the media, or is it the media, kind of attacks the other media willfully at the will of the president. Plus, we'll talk about how Kylie Jenner's birthday really kind of tells us the state of the world today. Joining me through all of this madness is a guy that I am sure is going to need some sort of clinical treatment at the end of this program. It's Drew Landry. Welcome back, Drew.
Hey, I'm glad to be back. I'm ready to dive in, man. Let's do it.
Okay, let's start with our first story having to do with, because before we went to the break, we were talking about Fox News and whether or not you believe it to be a legitimate news enterprise, there is something very interesting that Fox News has done as of late through just, well, not just two of their political commentators, but side-eyeing the topic is Brian Kilmeade and stuff from Fox and Friends. Fox News Network has started to, almost like Doctor Who at the Christmas special, the first time he came around with a sticker rack, is saying some pretty weird rumors about Joe Biden's health with no backing evidence. Drew, are they trying to cast Joe Biden in some sort of negative light at the behest of Donald Trump?
If we're playing charades, you win. That's exactly what's happening right here. This is what they did in 2016 with Hillary. Trying to put into question, is Joe Biden up to the task? Is, you know, can this happen? Is he really the old Joe who works hard and can really be there throughout the night and be the one to answer that late night phone call? Is that the Joe Biden that we know? It looks like that he might be sick. And they have this caveat. That this incredible the campaign that they're throwing at her, this whisper campaign of saying things like, well, people who are in the campaign are saying this. People who are Democrats are saying this. Well, you know what, Fox News? No one in Biden's campaign is going to talk to you on the record. So let's just get that out of the way. Okay? And secondly, The only Democrat you probably know is Dennis Kucinich, and as he will just show up anywhere and just talk about some alien interaction that he had with a UFO back in the 90s, okay? So this is complete and utter trash, because this is what Fox News does. They're turning into, if not they already have been, the arm of President Trump. They are the attack dog for him. They are fearful of Joe Biden, and so they're going after him in an attempt to try to get all the Democrats to go and be around Joe Biden so that they can create a Biden-Trump 2020 campaign. This is what they're trying to do. And right now, you know, you're not really seeing a lot of Democrats really coming in, you know, for this type of bait here. But this is the Fox News trick. This is what they're doing. And it's just flat out disgusting. But it's worked. But this type of thing works with Republicans. It works with them because they go on this thing and say, well, Fox News said it, so therefore it has to be true because, you know, Fox News is incredibly, you know, up to date and totally reliable. And maybe if they posted on Facebook, maybe, you know, Republicans would, you know, buy into it some more.
Well, this is the thing that I kind of want to bring up about this whole story, because I hate to play into stereotypes, but since we're talking about a bunch of white, uneducated men here, I think I'm going to use a stereotype to kind of describe this behavior. Isn't this weird that Fox News is attacking Joe Biden in a way that almost makes it seem like, Drew, I'm not going to say this any gingerly than this, did maybe something he wore, maybe something he said provoked this kind of attack, Joe Biden? Is maybe the victim to blame in this whole scenario here?
I got to tell you, you know, Joe Biden has been around for a long time, so he may have said something, you know. This whole gossip about, you know, involving support that he has from black voters and garnering up a whole host of other types of conspiracy theories from Fox News, they're so desperate they'll grasp for any type of straw to just get something out of somebody. So I'm not surprised that they would say that this is based in something, but that's my gut feeling on that.
Yeah, because this is the weird thing. Because, yeah, victim blaming is something that all white guys do. Let's just go ahead and face it.
Very much so.
And there is the part of me, the non-political pundit, the stand-up comedian in me that's going, was it the way that he wore his tie that turned on Trump in such a way? Hey, you should have held out like Stormy Daniels and went for the money, Biden.
He must have had his tie, you know, just a bit too longer than Trump.
Yeah,
because you know Trump loves to have his ties about, you know, from his neck down to his shoes.
Well, apparently it. Never mind. Thing is that when it comes to these unprecedented attacks against Joe Biden, the other reason that I said perhaps Joe Biden's behavior brought these on is because let's just look at the Iowa caucus and Biden's no-show. A lot of people on the Democratic side are actually saying this, that Joe Biden is running a national versus Trump campaign versus a caucus and primary against other Democratic contenders campaign. Could that be the reason that Fox News is so adamantly going after him and trying to smear him so far away from even the primary?
Absolutely. That's definitely what they're up to. He doesn't show up to this, kind of wondering, oh, hey, wait a minute, maybe he's sick. The American Medical Association considers it wholly unethical to speculate on public officials' health. But that doesn't stop Fox News from, you know, saying anything about it, you know, and taking these whispers from so-called Democrats and really trying to make hay out of something that, you know, maybe something's there, perhaps it isn't. Maybe Biden had something else going on. I don't know what his reasons were or reason was for missing that particular event, but to immediately come to the conclusion that he's not well that is a bit of a that is such a stretch, and that is such a crazy thing that it doesn't put, you know, that just falls within the confines of Fox News.
Yeah, it kind of does. And this is the thing, too, because Fox News is kind of like this small little bit of the huge pantheon of a smear campaign of people on the right against normal society in large. And now, this is kind of one of those weird things, because if you ever look at Fox News, Fox News has this problem with their female host looking like Clonezillas. Am I wrong?
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. They have a particular interest in making sure that their female hosts, their women hosts, are, you know, just like, you know, Stepford wives. Yeah. And yeah.
Well, this is the thing, is because this is how society works, at least on the GOP side. Ready? This is okay, Drew. You might want to pour something a little stronger than water for this.
Okay.
Okay. When it comes to how media is presented in the United States, if you are a woman, you cannot exist on camera unless you are young and beautiful and subservient to a much older on-camera guy. Look no further than Brian Kilmeade and Steve Ducey and whichever random blonde they insert between them on Fox and Friends. This formula is played out time and time and time again, almost as if, I don't know here, it seems like that side of the political aisle is really misogynistic and into almost systematic oppression of women. Am I wrong here?
If you ask the typical Fox News watcher, they'll say, hey, those women are hot. Well, I love watching all these networks with these women on it because they're just hot. And you think for a second, maybe that's why they have him on there, and just to get you to watch it. It has nothing to do with the knowledge that they may or may not have. A lot to do with their looks. And the fact that you hit the nail on the head with the way you described it, that's exactly what we have here, is a rather misogynistic viewpoint as to how women will be viewed on this. Yes.
Well, see, this is the thing. As long as we're talking about misogyny, there is a show that has just came out for its season 3 that is the epitome of a state-run media that is very, very beholden to its chief executor in a way that is oppressive and misogynistic towards women. Of course, talking about all media that is displayed in Gilead, you know that from The Handmaid's Tale.
Right.
Now, here's the thing. Over the weekend, of all people, socially conscious activist Kylie Jenner threw a birthday party, whereas, and I'm not making this up, the theme of her party was The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, no.
If you know anything about the actual narrative of The Handmaid's Tale, not exactly empowering to young women, Kylie. So she's taken a lot of social backlash on it. But here's the thing. Kylie Jenner throwing a Handmaid's Tale birthday party at the tail end of talking about a misogynistic network that won't let women age or actually be more advanced than their older male co-hosts. The thing is Kylie Jenner also is kind of throwing a party that it describes almost intricately Alabama's abortion laws. And Drew, as long as we're talking about birthday parties, Alabama abortion legislation is not exactly the happiest of them.
No, it isn't. You know, this made the news a few weeks ago because this is one of the most ultra restrictive abortion laws in all of the states. It prohibits abortions in a lot of cases, with the only exception being if the life of the mother is in danger, and that's it. And so, if you've been raped, if there's incest happening, that's not a legitimate reason, according to the state of Alabama, for a woman to have an abortion. And what we also have found out today, and what some other types of media that's been reporting here for the past few days, is that along with this particular provision in the bill, there's another aspect that says the rapist, okay, the rapist can get parental rights. All right, let's just let that sink in, that the rapist can get parental rights, sue for them, and have that and have them be restored.
You know that who else has that?
I think it was Minnesota.
Oh, I was also going to say Gilead from The Handmaid's Tale.
I think Texas has some particular provision with that, too. I mean, this is just the most bizarre, backward-thinking that I can ever really think of here. I mean, this is, and, you know, when certain lawmakers were mentioned to this, they just felt, oh, my gosh, that's something that we forgot. And I'm just thinking to myself, how did you not even know about this to begin with? Like, you know, this should be, you know, forefront and a much bigger issue come in their next legislative session, whenever that may be for Alabama. But, you know, this is something that rapists, because, you know, these aren't men. All right. These are criminals. These are thugs. These are just terrible, awful people. All right. Mm-hmm. Who have committed an incredible crime and should, you know, go to jail for a very long time, if not face the death penalty. My own personal opinion. No. However, they are getting out. They are suing for their parental rights. And in some areas, they're winning their parental rights. And you just have to wonder here. Your head must spin. And with three letters, what WTF, I mean WTH, whatever type of what in the world is going on, where am I living, this has to really resonate and say this type of stuff can't happen anymore.
You know, I'm almost about to change this to a WTA and a what the Alabama? Because they are seriously a little chunk of hell on earth when it comes to women reproductive rights. Now, this is the thing that I think is really weird, because who ever thought that talking about Kylie Jenner's birthday would lead us here? the central thing in A Handmaid's Tale is basically that these fertile women are property of the state. And as such, their rights are tied to their viability of reproduction. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to Alabama, I don't want to, like, you know, stretch anybody's imagination here, but by saying that a woman does not have a right to an abortion under any circumstance that she deems fit up to a medically safe and sound limit, That abortion cannot now occur in the case of incest and rape only if the mother's life is in imminent danger, which, by the way, have you ever tried to prove your life is in imminent danger in a court of law? Yeah, that's another way of saying no abortions ever in Alabama. Yeah. Now, not only can a woman not terminate a pregnancy, but as such, that material, before it becomes viable at 24 weeks, inside of her actually has more rights than her and is not a property of the state, but her uterus is. And this is a scary thing, because Alabama didn't go as far as Georgia of criminalizing you leaving the state, basically saying, we own your baby factory. Alabama, though, on the meantime, has said, you know what? No matter what circumstances you have that little miracle birth of yours, we have to make sure that it has a stable home by having daddy included. And daddy could be a very violent criminal, which we should also point out, if you're in Alabama, statistically speaking, those types of offenders are predominantly white.
Yeah.
So, Drew, when we try to wrap up this whole Alabama and a abortion law story in a nutshell that people can understand, I have to say, go watch The Handmaid's Tale. We're like 3 years from that in Alabama year.
It certainly feels like it, because, you know, this is nothing more than trying, you know, this is what states like this are trying to do. They're trying to get this law, get this particular thing to the Supreme Court. so that they can challenge, you know, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, and then later overturn Roe v. Wade. That's what this whole thing is. They don't care about the health of women. They don't care about that. They want to overturn Roe v. Wade. That's what it all comes down to. And so they feel with Georgia and the heartbeat bill, with Alabama and this, and Missouri and Ohio, Kentucky, all of these states that have passed these very restrictive abortion bills, they want this to go up to the U.S. Supreme Court with a new justice like Brett Kavanaugh, and have this ongoing idea, this momentum, if you will, to, in a sense, overturn Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which will eventually overturn Roe v. Wade. This has nothing to do with their ability of trying to make women feel safe in their state, feel safe in their area. It's all about overturning Roe.
Because this is the thing. Overturning Roe is just one step that we can take against women for a specific reason. This is an interesting question. As of late, I've had people actually approach me and be like, well, why don't we start, like, you know, policing men's junk just the same? Mm-hmm. Let's make vasectomies illegal and this and that and the other. And as outlandish and crazy as those ideas are, the reason that we can't enact them is actually more outlandish. Drew, let's talk about how Alabama was one of those states that did not get behind the ratification of the ERA, commonly known as the Equal Rights Amendment.
They were not a part of that. You need 38 states to ratify a constitutional amendment proposal. There were a grand total of 35. There were three states shy. What many people don't know is Texas was one of those states that ratified ERA, but Alabama was not. Alabama has been behind the curve so many times. And, you know, just another example of that is that they finally decided to ratify the 13th Amendment in 1995.
Yeah, okay? The 13th Amendment was the one that abolished slavery.
Yeah, exactly. And they did it, you know, just a good 130 years after the Civil War ended. But hey, thanks for coming along, you know. But yeah, this is, you know, they have been so far behind on a whole host of just what should be common sense, everyday person issues, and making sure that women have doesn't have to be equal rights in every sense of the term. But just basic human everyday type of things, you know, that everybody can really agree with. And and they just seem to be constantly falling behind on that. And not voting for ERA in the 70s is a great example of that. I mean, this is a state that, I hate to say it, but, you know, it has a great football program with both, you know, University of Alabama and Auburn. And they do a lot of, you know, they're the basis of the Southeastern Conference when it comes to those things. And I mean no disrespect when I say this, yet at the same time I do. Y'all are screwed, okay? And just messed in the head. And I don't, you know, this is just
alarmingly frustrating.
A weird state. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I want to tell you one of the things that is alarmingly frustrating about Alabama. In essence, their abortion laws, much like the ones coming out of Missouri and Georgia, I'm sorry, I just had to do that real quick.
I'm glad you did. That was good.
Yeah. But I had to lighten up the mood before I tell you this next bit of information. Those two states basically enacted abortion laws that kind of, if you actually look at the letter and the implication of the law, claim ownership over a woman's body. And the reason they can do that is because we don't have an ERA that says we can't make laws against women that like we can against men, and vice versa. Everybody has to be treated equally regardless of gender in the United States. And because we don't have that ERA, a lot of people have been like, well, how does these abortion laws get made anyway? If I can't tell a guy to do this, how can I tell a woman to do that? Because we never gave women legal status like we did men. Am I wrong?
Nope, you're right. That's exactly what it is.
Isn't it sad that in the year 2019, we're still talking about the second-class citizenry of, well, half of the human race when it comes to laws within our country?
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. It's incredibly wrong. But this is where we are. And I hate to sound like a broken record here, but I'm going to. I don't know if I've said this on this show, but I've said it many times in my life. The best way to prevent this from happening is to elect women who run for office, because we don't do that. And there's something to be said that, well, it's hard to get women to run for office. That's true. It is. But at the same time, whenever you get them to run, they make just as good, if not better, candidates than men do. Yeah. Research has suggested that time and time again. So if we have to get women to run for office more and more and more, and we have to start to elect them in the best way possible.
Can we go ahead and fairly say that a lot of reason behind getting the difficulty in getting women to run, I should say, is because they understand the very toxic masculinity that comes with politics?
That's also a part of it too. I mean, you know, they'll be judged in different ways than men will. Oh. You know, you can criticize a woman for saying, "Oh, well, she must not have been in a very good mood. I mean, her hair was in a bun. I guess it was tied too tightly." I mean, you would never say that about a male candidate. You would never criticize a man for a response that was given because of his shoes or his hair or any other type of thing. This is the constant crap that women have to put up with. So they're kind of looking at this and go, "I don't want to be part of that." But at the same time, we need you to get involved because we need this sort of balance. We need their perspective on reproduction rights, on education, on security, on gun violence, on even racial aspects. We have to have this particular conversation, and it has to start coming. It has to stop coming from people like you and me, Shaggy.
Yeah, unless you want to do that conversation loudly from the sidelines and yell questions at their male counterparts. Like, for instance, Drew, and we've got like a minute left here, so give me a yay or nay on this. Would this be an adequate question to yell at a male candidate at a speech? Who's taking care of your kids while you're here?
Yay.
Yay. That's because that's the type of question that women get asked whenever
they run. I think that's a fantastic question. I think also you had some questions earlier from another particular person who was saying, were you this person's ex-girlfriend?
Right. Because look, some guy got the wrong number over the weekend, right? And then he comes at me and I'm trying to talk to him very nicely, explain to him 12 separate occasions, I am not in fact his ex-girlfriend. To which he said, and I quote, "You don't sound like a dude. It's kind of creepy." And I hate to say it, but that's the end of the show. Creepy voice Mick, well, Mick Creepy Voice Shaggy here is gotta say thank you, Drew, for joining us for this little episode.
I'm always glad to be with you, buddy. It's always fun.
Yeah. Until next time, guys, try to keep it non-toxic. Love you, mean it. Kate, and bye.